is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The National Football League once again finds itself under an unflattering spotlight regarding concussions. Last Sunday, three quarterbacks left games with these brain injuries. Meanwhile, more than 2,000 former NFL players have sued the league, saying it ignored emerging research linking concussions with dementia, depression, and even early death. Last Wednesday, NFL Chief Roger Goodell attempted to head off the rising criticism. Speaking at Harvard, Goodell said the league constantly strives to make the game safe, but he also said it's unfair to pick on football alone.
Concussions are hardly an issue limited to football or the NFL. Concussions affect more than 30 million athletes in the United States and more than 350 million athletes around the world.
Still, at the level of youth sports, football is often singled out as the most dangerous game for young people, given the particulars of the developing brain and the inevitability of hits to the head. Here in New Hampshire, a member of the Dover School Board this fall caused quite a stir when he suggested a possible ban on high school football. Although retired Dr. Paul Butler once played the game himself, he says given what we now know about kids and concussions, it's time for a serious conversation about the impact of this sport on young people. Today in The Exchange, more red flags for youth football, the emerging research, and the rising debate. Let's hear from you. Did you play football as a kid? Or do you now have children who play? What do you think? Is the game inherently too dangerous for young brains and young bodies? Or are we going a little bit overboard in protecting our youth from every possible risk? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have two physicians with us in studio. Dr. Paul Butler is here, retired general surgeon, and the school board in Dover, who I mentioned. Dr. Butler himself played football in high school and in college. And Dr. Butler, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me.
Also with us, Dr. Stuart Glassman, Doctor of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation in Concord, and an assistant professor at Dartmouth Medical School and an instructor at Tufts. And Dr. Glassman, thank you also for taking the time and coming in.
Thank you for inviting me, Laura.
Well, and Dr. Butler, let's start with you. As I said, you played the game yourself in high school and college. What's changed? Why do you think today's high schoolers should no longer play like you did?
Well, it's interesting. I loved the game, when I was younger, and played it with great enthusiasm. What's changed for me is the literature that's come out in the past 10 years, mostly from neuropathologists, a man named Bennett Omalu and a woman at BU and in the Boston area named Anne McKee have published peer-reviewed studies that have shown that repeated head trauma can cause long-term brain damage. And that has concerned me tremendously. This particular syndrome has been known about for years and years because of the concept of brain damage from boxing. And it's now being seen in football players, even in young football players. And so that's what has me so concerned.
It's the more that we know these days about the impact of repeated head injury or brain injury. And yet, you turned out okay. You played in high school and college. Here you are, retired surgeon, distinguished career. So,
well, thank you. I certainly am not as sharp as I was 20 years ago, but that's probably just being 20 years older, I hope. But had I known then what I know now about the danger to my brain, I would never have played, I must admit, as much as I enjoyed the game. And the reason is the brain is who we are. You know, it's not just our cognitive function and our executive function. It's our emotions. It's our very being. It's how we love people. And if we damage that as a youngster, then that is not good for us for our whole life.
Dr. Glassman, what do you think? There is more research, more conversation these days about kids and concussions. What do we know that we didn't know earlier? And what do you think about Dr. Butler's call to possibly ban high school football?
Well, I think that we know that there are certainly risks in playing any contact sport, football being one of them. I think that Dr. McGee's work, Dr. O'Malley's work, certainly have shown that there have been cases where retired professional athletes and as well as some college-level players have had changes in the brain that you wouldn't expect in that age group. You might expect them in a much older population. We're seeing that there is a trend towards some earlier findings. But I don't think that applies to the millions of athletes around the country that are playing football, ice hockey, field hockey, soccer. But I think it has certainly brought to question the issue of youth sports and safety. I agree with Dr. Butler that obviously, the brain is a very important organ, probably the most complex organ, in our bodies. And the information, the research that's been published has at least brought the question of if this is not safe as is, let's strive for more safety. But I don't think that there's been any studies that have shown that there's a higher incidence across the board in any sport, football included.
Well, and we were talking before the show, you've got three boys, right? So
yes.
What's your sort of policy towards football and other hard-hitting contact sports?
Full
disclosure here.
And my sons play, contact sports, football and basketball. I look at them every day when they come home, and I obviously, look for any signs of any changes. They've all done preseason neurocognitive testing before their sports. And I would say that the more information that's come out, the more informed, I've been and other parents have been. But certainly my threshold for, having them, sit out if there is any symptoms, questions until we know what's happening. I'm certainly focused on that. But I think the information that's been out there has at least led to more awareness that if there's a problem, we can manage it better because we understand some of the, physical changes, neurochemical changes, physiologic changes in the brain.
Yeah, and so a lot of this discussion, and we'll get into this hour, is not just about the sport itself, I imagine, Dr. Glassman, but smarter parenting, smarter coaching.
Correct, right.
What do you think, Dr. Butler, on the other side of this whole issue of childhood concussions is this looming epidemic of childhood obesity? I wonder what you think about, are we going overboard? We're trying to protect our kids from every possible risk out there. Some boys and girls, going for a hike or walk isn't enough for them. They want that sort of rough and tumble play.
Sure. That's one of the criticisms I've had is that I'm increasing the chances of childhood obesity and diabetes, and that is a serious problem in this country. There's no question about that.
Probably a bigger problem than concussions.
It certainly is a big problem. My answer to that is that we can get all the benefits of football without risking the brain in other games. Soccer, for example. Even lacrosse, even hockey. The reason I'm picking on football and not these other games is that football uses the head as an integral part of the game. I know that coaches and the athletic directors are now trying to teach the children, the athletes, to tackle properly with their heads up. It just is not happening. When that child is on the field and he's trying to stop another person carrying the ball, all of that teaching goes out the window because of the adrenaline and the invincibility of youth and the optimism of youth. And so that child will lower his head at the last minute. You see it at all levels of play, from the NFL down to Pee Wee football.
How much does that NFL play that you watch on TV over the weekend, and I'm sure many of us will be watching on Thanksgiving, for example, how much does that type of NFL play trickle down to the kids?
I think a lot of it does. They emulate what they see on the TV. It's a spectacular TV game. It's a made-for-TV game, in my opinion, which is part of the reason it's so popular. So I think a lot of it does trickle down to that.
Let me invite our listeners to join us, and then we'll talk some more. Our number here on The Exchange for you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. Did you play football yourself as a kid? Do you now have children who play? What do you think about this conversation? Is the game just inherently too dangerous for young brains and young bodies, or are we going overboard in protecting our youth from every possible risk out there? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And first up is Debbie in Derry. Hi, Debbie, you're on the air. Go ahead. And we seem to have lost Debbie. Hope you call back, Debbie, when you're in range. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You know, one of the things that's been said about this, Dr. Glassman, is it's one thing to talk about the risks, but we're not just talking about any old game here with football, are we? We're talking about a national pastime for many communities. I mean, the marching band, the Friday night football game, that's a big social event.
Yep. And with my middle son having played in the state high school championship division II this past weekend, it is a big event. And I asked him yesterday, I said, should football be, banned from school? What do you think? And he said, no, because, I want to get out of the house. I want to do things. And certainly you touched on obesity. And yet at the same time, as a treating physician, I mean, I see probably 20 kids a week in my office from different sports with concussion assessment and follow-up.
Really? Wow.
Yep. And, it's not my concern about the people in the stands. My real concern is the players on the field. Of course, there is a large sort of, associated benefit for towns and schools, social pride. And certainly when you look at what some of the players and the coaches talk about with football, hard work, working together, team, focus, leadership.
Perseverance.
Right, exactly. There are other ways to learn that in other sports. But certainly there are social benefits and there are physical benefits from the game. But I think if the focus is to make the game as safe as it can be, the incidence of these, catastrophic injuries or cumulative trauma injuries over time should go down. The only way to really eliminate it completely is to not play. But I think that's not a realistic choice for most people who enjoy the sport.
Can you talk about that just a little bit more, though? Your son said, yeah, if it weren't for football, I wouldn't get out of the house. But he could do something else. He could play basketball or soccer.
Oh, sure. Exactly. And I think that there are probably some kids who can absorb some of the physical contact a little bit better. I think if you remember, the studies that have been done and the autopsies and the brain transections are in players who were treated in the old way of treating concussions, not the new way.
All right.
So it's not comparing apples to oranges exactly.
Well, and we've learned a lot over the past couple of years. We'll talk about that after a short break and take your calls too at 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of. Find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts. Learn about special events. There's always something more at NHPR.org. New Hampshire weather today, mostly sunny, highs near 40 for the North Country, 50 in parts of southern New Hampshire. Clear tonight, lows 20 in the north, 30 in the south. And for tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs near 40 in the north, 50 in the south. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And from the Shaheen and Gordon Law Firm, business and corporate law, health care, family matters, criminal defense, and personal injury. Offices in Dover, Concord, and Manchester. ShaheenGordon.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, should youth and high school football be banned, given growing knowledge and growing concern about concussions? We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have two guests in studio, Dr. Paul Butler, retired general surgeon, school board member in Dover, who caused a stir earlier this fall when he said Dover should consider a ban on high school football. Dr. Butler played football himself in high school and college. Also with us, Dr. Stuart Glassman, doctor of physical medicine and rehabilitation in Concord. And with us now on the phone from Derry is Tim Powers, athletic director at Pinkerton Academy in Derry. And Tim Powers, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, from your coach's perspective, what do you make of rising concerns about football and concussions, even Dr. Butler's call to possibly end football?
I think the concussion piece and the information that's out there now is it's good. I mean, it's an important piece to have, and we've fortunately here, we've been ahead of the curve as far as how we've handled it and treated it over the last couple of years. And I think it's an important piece, and obviously more knowledge is needed about it. And you can see in the last 10 years or so that a lot more knowledge has come out about what concussions are, their long-term effects, how to handle them, how to deal with them. So it's important to see that, and it's important for more research and more information to keep going to come out with this, and also to inform the parents and the athletes and everyone involved so that they are aware of what a concussion is and what the effects are and how to handle it and treat it.
Yeah, how do you see just public attitudes in general, Mr. Powers, changing toward concussions? It seems like 10 or 20 years ago people said, well, you just got hit on the head. Today, you know, we call concussions a brain injury.
Yes, it used to be, oh, you got your bell rung and you'd laugh about it, you'd wear it as a badge of honor and you get back in there. Now it's a brain injury, and you have, if the mechanism is there for a head injury, we're very fortunate. We have athletic trainers that handle it, and the coaches aren't involved in the decision to put them back into play or not. It goes right to the athletic trainers, and they deal with it. And now you can see athletes even self-reporting when they've been involved in an incident and there is something going on. So there's more knowledge out there, and you can see that the perception is changing so that people are more aware of it, and it's taken seriously by everyone involved.
Yeah, self-reporting by athletes, though, I'm wondering if that's really a big part of the problem. I mean, no football player wants to pull himself out of the game, especially at the crucial moment.
It's tough. We actually had an athlete a few weeks ago do that in a varsity game, self-report that he was having some symptoms, and he met with the athletic trainer and he pulled him out for the rest of the game. That's still fewer and far between during games where an athlete comes forward and self-reports, because you're in the moment of the game, and it's harder for them to pull themselves out. Because it's not like a broken leg or a sprained ankle or something where it's very easy to see the injury.
Right.
A concussion is a hidden injury. Really, the only one that knows it is the athlete.
I want to bring our doctors into this conversation too, Mr. Powers, and also invite our listeners to join us. But one more question for you before we do.
Sure.
There's been a lot of talk, at least at the NFL level and at the youth level, I think, about changing the way the game is played, changing some of the equipment involved. Do those changes help a good deal or not?
They do. If you can go back, you don't even have to go back that far in time to see the way the game was played. And if you look at what the NFL has done in the way the officials call the game and the types of penalties they call on blows on defenseless receivers, on the quarterbacks, and calling the game to change the way the game is played there, and it's all a trickle-down effect. And those types of hitting is not allowed. And if you go out to practice and that, and you see the way the coaches are teaching the hitting and the proper mechanics of tackling and everything like that, you see that they're taking the head out of play. That they're the second an athlete goes forward and they have their head down or head in the wrong position, the whistle blows now and it's stopped. They're very aware of, and they're making great strides in the teaching and the proper techniques and all that, and how to play the game.
Well, Dr. Butler, real quick, what do you think about that? There are ways to make this game a little bit safer.
I have no doubt that the coaches are doing a better job now trying to teach proper mechanics. On the other hand, when people started to worry about cigarettes being dangerous, The cigarette industry responded by saying, we've made them safer. We've put filters on them, and we've reduced the tar and nicotine. And that's, I think, equivalent to what's happening now. We've made football safer by teaching proper technique, but when you watch it on TV or even at a regular game at any level, you do not see proper technique every time. They've made it safer by having better training and better helmets. The helmets, in my opinion, are just stronger, and they're transmitting all that kinetic energy right to the brain. They are sparing the skull, so we see fewer skull fractures. But all that kinetic energy ends up at the brain because the brain swims inside our skull with a little bit of leeway because of the cerebral spinal fluid. And so when the head stops, suddenly the brain keeps going and then hits the inside of the skull, causing the damage. So to me, it's like the cigarette industry's response. I don't mean to be too harsh, but it does not make sense to me. I've thought about this game so carefully, and I don't see how you can change it without making it something unrecognizable, such as flag football, and make it safe.
Let's see what our listeners think. And again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. And first up is Mike in Rollinsford. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I also played high school football and enjoyed it. Still enjoy college and professional football. But my concern here is that football is not a sport that gives you fitness for life. And especially in schools, we spend so much of our resources on football programs, whereas other programs like tennis and golf and cross country, track and field, basketball, are all fitness for life type of sports, where even when you're in your 60s, which I am, there are basketball leagues. I've been a competitive road runner most of my life, and I think the cost benefit thing about football, because how many people, I don't know what the statistics are, but I think two of my teammates went on to play college football out of, 80 people, and nobody played professional football, but most of the school's resources were put into the football program.
You know, Mike, this is a point that has come up again, especially since Dr. Butler raised this issue. I wonder what you think, Tim Powers, from a financial and a lifelong fitness perspective. Our caller is questioning whether football's worth it.
I think it definitely is worth it. While you may not play the game, majority of them, of the students that play through high school, and that's it. They don't play in college, and very few get on to professional levels. But the life lessons, all those types of things that you take from football, what it teaches you, are things that you carry on for the rest of your life. The discipline, time management, teamwork, facing adversity, those are all things that I would argue are essential to the rest of your career. There are many times when you hear, I've talked to, whether it's teammates that I had in high school or college, or students that I coached when I was a coach in high school, that I'll come back and talk to them, and they'll say, coach, what I learned and what I did in football, that's helped me so much further in my career and in life, and whether it's been tough times that they've had with financially or in getting another job, or the hard work that they had to put in football taught them that hard work does pay off and that you have to work hard in order to achieve goals and in setting goals and that. So I think those are the things that you take from playing football that are lifelong lessons and lifelong activities that will go throughout the rest of your life. So while you may not be playing football at age 60, what you learned when you were 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, you're still carrying on when you're in your later years.
Well, and Mike, thanks a lot for the call. And Dr. Glassman, a question for you. Speaking of lifelong fitness, there are other sports out there, as we've said, but I have also heard that other sports also have their share of concussions. Girls soccer, I think, often scores pretty high when it comes to concussions, too. So what do you think? Why pick on football?
I don't know why football was singled out other than it's probably the most popular sport in the country, but certainly ice hockey, soccer, girls or boys soccer, field hockey, basketball, you know, contact sports, collision sports, certainly will lead to an increased incidence of head injuries. It's important, to understand that there is a physical fitness component that is in all of these sports. The game for football has changed recently, where the NCAA has limited the number of contact practices per week to one per week. The Ivy League also cut down on the number of contact practices allowed.
So if you're going to get hit hard, you might only get hit hard in a game, but not so much during practice?
Correct.
Is that what that's about?
Because there's more practices per week than games, and therefore you can certainly cut down on the number of contacts to the head and neck, obviously, in the practice setting. And youth football and high school football programs can certainly incorporate that into their strategy, and many have. And so, therefore, if you're having less contacts during practice, typically football is going to go from early August to the end of October, early November. You've got cardiovascular training. You've got weightlifting during that time frame. You are going to get a physical benefit, certainly. I think the key is making it safer. Certainly there are ways to practice better and be able to identify players even during the game to make sure that the risk-benefit goes in favor of the player, obviously.
And you talked about this earlier, Dr. Butler, but real briefly, again, you've been asked so many times, why pick on football? Girls' soccer, basketball, hockey?
All these other sports have great risk for concussions as well. The reason I'm picking on football is that the head is used as a spear, and the head is used as a battering ram. And these helmets that I've spoken about help to give the athlete a sense of invincibility. And so you can't see a game of football without seeing that the head is being used either as a spear or as a battering ram over and over again. As far as the benefits of football are concerned, I got tremendous benefits from football. I'm sure it helped me in my schoolwork and so on.
It's related to our college.
Hard work,
yeah.
And so on. But I believe you can get those benefits from other games and without risking the brain.
Let's take another call. This is John in Manchester. Hi, John, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. I read somewhere recently that it was on the network program Rock Center, and it was on girls' soccer in particular, but I think that they mentioned how that the major component or the first preventative step in terms of concussion is to strengthen their necks. These girls' necks are not strong enough to absorb the hit when they do when they hit the ball.
Especially the little kids. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. Well, even teenage girls, all the way up the line, women's necks are inherently weaker than men, their counterparts. But even in Pop Warner football, where these kids go out and they sort of put their neck on the line, they're not addressing the issue of strengthening their neck. And I know that there's I have a practitioner that I see who's starting a campaign in Manchester that dealing just with strengthening the neck, going after these clubs and teams and giving them equipment to cheap stuff that really will work on the issue of just strengthening the neck. I mean, the staring and that kind of stuff has really been markedly reduced and they stopped doing it, but that's like a whiplash. If you get hit broadside and you don't see it coming or whatever, your neck goes through a total sort of a flexion extension kind of injury, as they call it. Or when it hits the ground, if it can absorb the muscles absorb the shock before the head actually hits the ground, this is a major step in terms of preventing concussion. And
right.
This is a BU medical research, Dr. Cantu, who was they were hired by the or petitioned by the NFL to do this. They give them $1 million to do this study, and they said they got to strengthen their necks.
Yeah, and John, I've definitely read about that. And Tim Powers, again, you're a coach at Pinkerton Academy in Derry. What do you think? There has been a lot of attention to this idea of training athletes so that their bodies are better able to withstand these blows.
Yes, there definitely has been a lot of emphasis on the training aspect that goes in. It's gone are the days when they show up the day of the season starting, and that's the first time they do any kind of physical activity. Now these students are training year round for their sports. Whether it's one, two, three sports they play, they're working on it year round. I mean, this used to be the lifting was just football, and that was it. If you played football, you lifted. No one else lifted. Now you see every athlete is lifting, whether it's male, female, no matter what sport it is. The weight room has been incorporated into their training so that they're training their entire body. And a big aspect of it is strengthening the neck so that they're from head to toe strengthening all their muscles and not just working on a specific area. And I think that's a piece that's going to continue to grow and to help combat the concussion issue.
And you're at the high school level, so you may not know, but I'll ask you anyway, Tim, what about the littler kids, though? You know, all those youth soccer leagues or football leagues, Pop Warner keeps coming up. I mean, I can see at the high school level, you've got good coaches, good trainers, you've got, you know, a weightlifting program, but what about at the younger levels where it's a little more casual?
You can start to see more changes in particular football. The NFL has really done a great job of reaching out to the younger levels and passing on the information and guidelines and recommendations so that you can see now the younger levels are buying into and they're training their coaches on the different proper techniques, the amount of contact that they can have in practice and all that. So you can see, especially in football, that at the younger levels, they're getting better towards it. And unfortunately, all of the different youth programs, they don't all fall under the leadership. Like for us, the NHIA is the governing body for high school athletics. So we have to follow all the bylaws and guidelines there. So we're very structured in what we are required to do, and then each school can do more than that. At the younger levels, there isn't always that kind of governing body with that kind of structure. So you can see that they're starting to make progress with that.
Yeah, there's a big headline about that dreadful youth football game down in Massachusetts, Dr. Glassman. I think the score was 52-0 or something, and five little kids went out with concussions, and the game continued, and this caused a lot of ugly headlines about youth football.
Correct, and that was in a state where the state law applied to that age group. The callers may not be aware, but there was a state law that was passed in New Hampshire back in August dealing with concussion management, but only applied to the 9th through 12th grade student athletes in the state.
Right. We did a whole program on that.
Right. Does not apply to, you know, younger than that age group as well. So as much as the NFL is certainly trying to focus on this issue and has donated money and is coming to different school systems, you know, ultimately it's the coaches on the field. It's the parents in the stands. It's the athletic trainers on the sidelines. They really have the responsibility of being educated, understanding what they're seeing, and teammates being able to at least, you know, help each other as well. John, the prior caller, talked about Dr. Robert Cantu, and Dr. Cantu, the last couple of weeks, amongst other professionals, has been at two very important meetings. The first was in Zurich, Switzerland, the fourth consensus meeting for sport concussion. And out of that meeting, which had some of the premier researchers in this area, no specific age limit was picked as far as the risk above or below for tackle football, as an example, although Dr. Cantu talked about age 14 possibly being that. Recently, there was a meeting in Washington concerning, again, the same issue of safety in youth sports.
Okay. Well, and Tim Powers, I know you need to get back to work there, so I will let you go. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Tim Powers, Athletic Director at Pinkerton Academy in Derry. We'll continue our conversation after a very short break. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Keep it right here because we'll be right back.
This is NHPR coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10, the latest on the conflict between Israel and Gaza. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New England College School of Graduate and Professional Studies, now offering 7 MBA programs on site and online. Program details and registration at nec.edu. And Granite State Credit Union, providers of local residential and commercial mortgage and equity products with locations statewide, equal housing lender, gscu.org. This is NHPR.
NHPR News is now even easier to keep track of when you're on the go. Check out our new mobile website, designed especially for the screen on your phone. Whether you're looking for the latest news from across New Hampshire or around the world, or tapping into our 24-hour broadcast stream, NHPR is at your fingertips. Visit nhpr.org on your mobile device.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Granite State Republican leaders reflect on the recent elections. Email us your thoughts at exchange@nhpr.org before the program, and then join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, debating whether football should be banned for kids and high school athletes, given what we now know about concussions in the sport. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page or on The Exchange page at nhpr.org. And Dr. Butler, Dr. Glassman, let's go right back to our callers. Jane's been waiting in Walpole. Hi, Jane. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. I haven't been listening since the very beginning of the show, but just wanted to add that I think that looking at the topic in a more broad range, just about having impact to the head in general, is the most important thing to be looking at. I work as a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I treat the neuropsychiatric and cognitive issues that are related to having sustained head injury. And, you know, I'm aware that the research is actually showing it's not just a matter of looking at concussion, but that having repeated blows or impact to the head is what is also producing deleterious effects. And we also know that in this country, dementia as a diagnosis is on the rise, and it's also being diagnosed at a younger age. And so there's also thinking that anything that we can do to protect the head in general, you know, including like wearing helmets when if possible, is also helpful. And I think that something that was left out was that with respect to soccer as a sport, is that children under age 10, it is being recommended by the Institute of Medicine and the American Soccer Association that they do not engage in headbutting of any kind, and that actually the American Youth Soccer Association is requiring that children wear helmets at all times at their camps. So I do think that there's an emphasis of moving away from needing to look at only traumatic brain injury and concussion, and looking at prevention.
And repeated blows to the head. I just came across yet another report this morning, Dr. Butler, about the concern over repeated blows to the head. You do see some serious effects like dementia at early ages.
Apparently you do. And that they talk about the second impact syndrome, in which a youngster has a subclinical concussion, one that maybe he's not even aware of, or one that has just dazed him. He decides in the adrenaline rush of the game to stay in the game and then has another blow. And that apparently is very dangerous for the head. And it doesn't even take a blow to the head, actually, to cause some disturbance to the brain. I think a good hard shot to the chest, for example, can also disturb the brain if the head gets knocked around and whiplash, as one of your callers had spoken of before.
Yeah. Although, and again, we talked about this earlier, what about those kids, Dr. Butler, who really, you know, they've just got a lot of energy. They need to get it out. Cross country is a great sport. You know, I run myself, but that's just not exciting enough for some kids.
I agree. I think it's much more fun to compete in a game to get exercise than it is to just go run, although it is fun to run. I believe that you can get all the benefits of football from other games without risking the head as much, risking the brain as much as we do in football.
Again, speaking as a former player who loved
the
game.
Absolutely. And it would take just a few rule modifications. In these other games, hockey, for example, you could outlaw checking. Women's hockey is a beautiful sport at the college level or at any level because they do a little pushing and shoving but no real checking. And their passing is crisp. Their skating is tremendous. And you could change the sport without ruining the sport. Whereas in football, I think if you change it, it's going to be a totally different sport.
I have to ask you what you think about that, Dr. Glassman. I want to get back to our callers. We've got lots of people want to jump in, but what do you think? Could you change football to make it less dangerous, or is it inherently, as Dr. Butler says, dangerous for the head, and if you change it, it's no longer football. It's something else.
Well, the game has already changed, both on the professional level, as we've seen with newer, you know, penalties, changing, you know, hits, targeting quarterbacks, dropping your head, intentional penalties with fines, and people are still going to the game. So there's already been a change, certainly on any one play at any one moment. All, you know, reason can go out the window and someone, you know, does something they shouldn't do. And obviously it's too late. The hit's already happened. No matter how much you fine someone, you can't take the effect of that hit back. But I think certainly at the younger levels, the key is instruction. The key is talking about proper technique. And ultimately, you know, one of the areas where science is moving to is, so let's say someone does hit and doesn't tell that they're having symptoms. There are, you know, head accelerometers that can measure impact and force. They're somewhat cost prohibitive right now on a large level, but once they become more available, you'll be able to then be able to pick up in real time high impact forces that may not be described by the injured player, that may alert the people on the sideline to pull someone out, assess them, and ultimately make the game safer.
Let's take another call. This is Tom waiting in Manchester. Hi, Tom. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning. It occurred to me that at the beginning of the season this year in professional football that the game changed almost instantly when the substitute referees were present because the players and the coaches were sensitive to the way that things were being called. And so I think we were just talking about this a couple of seconds ago here on your show. If you change the way that penalties are called, if you make the penalties stiffer and train the referees to call the penalties for things related to head injury, you know, for safety, if you change that stuff to make it more and more common to really have an influence on the thing that everybody wants when they play in sports, which is they want to win the game, right? I think that you'll be making great strides to motivate them to be more safe. I mean, the game changed so fast during the beginning of the season.
Yeah, we forgot about that. We could probably do a whole show just on that, substitute officials and the impact they had on the game. What do you think about that, Dr. Butler?
I think, you know, I think you can certainly make things better. I just don't think you can make it safe enough so the game is worth continuing, at least at the high school level.
At the kid level, maybe, yes?
Especially at the kid level. I don't think it's a very safe game. You know, someone, I think it might have been Dr. Cantu, talked about bobble-headed football players. You know, these little children look like bobble-headed dolls out there with these big helmets and their little skinny necks running at each other. I think it's a very dangerous game. I can't see any way around it, that it's just not good for our brains. And I think our brains, as Dr. Glassman said, are awfully important.
Well, and here's an email related to the younger set. This is from Polly in Hancock. She says, I understand that schools are good about testing athletes before and after a season or game. Polly asks, what about Pop Warner football? Does that organization do any testing? Do you know about that, Dr. Glassman? Again, at the high school level, as Coach Powers said, you know, they're watching it, they're on it, they're doing the strength training, they're doing the testing. But what about these recreational leagues?
Right. So the baseline testing, the neurocognitive computer testing, is not required by any law or any organization. However, youth football organizations can do that. Actually, one of the youth football organizations, the John Stark Generals, I have done baseline testing for them for the past 2 years. It brings awareness. It brings awareness to kids. And when you do that early, kids start to understand that they will continue to think about head injury symptoms. And it's not just the testing. It's the education. It's meeting with the parents, doing a meet the coaches night in the late summer to say, okay, we're going to do this computer test, but then you really have to be able to make sure that you're telling us what you're feeling. So Pop Warner, American Youth Football, can certainly get that baseline testing done if they want to. Certain hospitals are doing that already. And the thing to remember that really no one has talked about thus far is in the classroom, kids with concussions, whether it's football, soccer, field hockey, may have some problems. And while we're talking about return to sport and multiple hits and how it affects people, the ultimate outcome is, you know, is your brain doing worse? Don't forget the classroom part of this entire issue. That wasn't addressed in the law. It wasn't addressed in the majority of state laws in this country. but kids' grades will go down if they're taking tests while they're under a concussion.
Wow. Right. Dr. Butler, jump in real quick, and then back to our callers.
Sure. As far as baseline testing is concerned, it's pretty well known that a lot of the athletes will do poorly on the original test in order to not look so bad if they have a concussion so they can continue
seriously?
To play. Seriously, unfortunately, that is true. I'd like to just quote or tell your listeners about one article that appeared in the Journal of Neurotrauma, October 7th, 2010. The title of the article, I think, explains what the point of the article is, which is functionally detected cognitive impairment in high school football players without clinically diagnosed concussions. So these researchers watched high school players who did not have concussions. Any student who had a concussion was not a part of the study. They looked at the ones who played football for a season, no concussions, and tested them before and after. And the test went down. So there were clinically detected impairment from this. This is a frightening game.
So that article, thank you, Dr. Butler, was published not just in that journal, but was also talked about in Sports Illustrated around 2010. So ultimately what it brings to mind is the following. If you're going to play any sport where there's an inherent risk, if you can make it safer, you're almost obligated to make it safer. Because if your students are going to put on the uniform for your school, can you do all you can do in order to make it safe for them?
All right. Let's take another call. This is Peter waiting in Manchester. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hi, everybody. I had a question. Why don't we do away with the helmet? Stop spearing. It would be like rugby or soccer or any other contact sports. And you'll take away the propensity to use your head as a spear, or if you do, you'll stop using it pretty soon.
That's a really interesting question. What do you think, Dr. Butler?
I think that's a very interesting question, and many people have asked me that since this all came out.
Really?
Yes, and it would make the game more like rugby. Rugby's a dangerous game also. There are injuries in rugby, but probably not as many as with football. The helmet gives these athletes a sense of invincibility.
Sure.
And the head is used as a battering ram, as I've said, and as a spear over and over again. If you didn't have a helmet on your head, you would try not to do that. But I think in rugby, I suspect that there are probably more skull fractures and subdural hematomas rather than these subclinical brain injuries that we don't detect. Now, it's interesting that in 1905, President Teddy Roosevelt, the Rough Rider of all Rough Riders, almost ended football. And it was because of the deaths that were happening on the football field. And what came out of that conference was the leather helmet. And so
they were playing without helmets.
They were playing
back
with no
then.
Helmets back then.
I see.
And then the leather helmets with no face masks came out, and now these new age plastics or whatever we're using now for.
So to Peter's point, it might not make it safer.
Well, it would make it safer in one way. I think that you'd end up with face trauma, broken noses, lost teeth, and that type of thing. But I think the brain would be at a little bit less risk now. Believe me, I am not advocating that we get rid of the helmets, but I think he has a very good point.
What do you think, Dr. Glassman? You've looked at kids with concussions.
Yep. So I think that a lot of concussions happen in sports where there's no helmet at all.
Right. Soccer, so, basketball,
right.
Whatever.
So even if you had a situation where you had flag football until age 10 and football with pads until age 14, you're still going to have kids inadvertently falling to the ground, whiplash injury, you know, to the head and neck, and likely concussions no matter what. Certainly it would take away the incentive if kids are using their head as a spear or as a weapon, which hopefully they're not because they're being taught that at a young level. But certainly it's not going to eliminate concussions by any means.
Well, Peter, it's an interesting question and one I hadn't thought of, so thanks for calling in. One last question for both of you, and Dr. Butler, I'll start with you first. As we said earlier, you spoke out on this issue on the Dover School Board, out of concern for the kids, their future, mental and physical health. But you also said you worried, as a school board member, that the board might face legal action or astronomically high insurance costs because of football. What about that? What are you worried about in terms of the financial aspects of this?
Our charge as school board members is to try to educate the children of Dover. And any dollars that we spend on football or defending lawsuits against football or insurance, paying for insurance because of potential lawsuits, Will be dollars taken away from teachers' salaries or classroom supplies or books or computers. My main concern, the main reason I brought it up, is that this information has only been available for about 10 years. I've only been aware of it for about a year because my area of medicine was in a different area. Once I learned about it, I became so concerned that we as adults should be at least warning the children. The children are old enough to read this material. It's not difficult material if they're 10 years or so old and can read. They can understand it for themselves, but the parents especially, I think, need to know about this information so they can make good decisions for their children.
What do you think, Dr. Glassman? Is there possibly a financial cost that school boards should look at? Football injuries could hurt a school district's bottom line if people feel like they're not being looked at closely enough or taken seriously enough.
Well, I think ultimately if there is a catastrophic injury, if there is a second impact syndrome, which we are hoping never happens in New Hampshire, it's very rare, one in a million. But if there's a catastrophic injury, someone's going to get sued. Someone's going to have to explain, how did we get there? Even in the best schools with team physicians, athletic trainers, concussion specialists, and coaches that are educated, and students that have been given the information, sometimes things fall through the crack, and not everyone is watched as closely every single time.
Well, there's an enthusiasm too with the game.
To some degree, But what I will say is 3 years ago when myself, our practice, were lecturing to school systems, there were seven people in the auditorium, five of whom didn't believe what we were saying and two of whom walked out. Now, 2012, the audiences are packed, people are listening, and I think there's been a tipping point where the fact the game, any game, has to change, I think people understand that now. And that was a huge shift for parents and coaches and schools and kids to get to. So now I think the question becomes, how do we make it even better?
So a big shift in awareness and attention and concern over just that short period of time that you talked about.
Right. When a 14-year-old hockey player comes in my office and says, how many concussions are too many? And the parents agree, there's been some awareness, which is great.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much for coming in today, raising our awareness. Dr. Glassman, it was nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Dr. Glassman, he's a director of physical medicine and rehabilitation in Concord and an assistant professor at Dartmouth Medical School, an instructor at Tufts. And Dr. Paul Butler, thank you also for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Paul Butler, retired general surgeon and a school board member in Dover. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Republicans reflect on the recent elections. Nationally and in New Hampshire, the grand old party got a grand old shellacking. Now that the dust has settled, we'll sit down with a panel of Granite State Republicans to get their views on what happened and where they hope to go from here. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR.